Well, good morning. Great to be back with you. I was part of the team that was in Comox last weekend, helping them with their Living Free conference. Wanda and I, Lucille, Sarah, and Kay were the team that came from here to help that church advance the DNA of healing and healing of the heart in that congregation. We had a great time, and it was really significant for me, a sense of going with you and being sent by you, that you were with us, that you were supporting us in prayer, and that we were doing something together, even though it was just a small team that was actually there from here. And so thank you so much for standing with us, for your prayers. We had a very good conference, a beautiful expression of unity in the churches in the Comox Valley. At least half of the people who came to the conference were from other churches. And so it was beautiful to see the message of Jesus as healer come to them and for them to receive that. The team did wonderful. They stayed Monday through Thursday and did individual sessions with people. They prayed with people. They shared their stories. And so we had just a wonderful time together. And so I wanted to let you know about that. Well, Happy New Year. No, I'm serious. It dawned on me last night that not only is this the first Sunday of Advent, but it's the start of the church year. And so this is, in fact, a new year that begins for us today. And I sort of hadn't put that together because I'm thinking Advent. But I'm reading, Wanda and I are reading a prayer devotional book that follows the church year. And so I turned to the last page last night. And there was something beautiful about that for me in that, to realize that something new was beginning this morning. And I've always liked the idea of January and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day and sort of the beginning of sort of a fresh page and opportunity to sort of restart some things. But because of how Christmas and family and all the events that happen, particularly they tend to crowd into those last weeks. Often New Year's Eve is just sort of more of that. Well, thank goodness that's almost over. Maybe we'll catch our breath the first week of January. Those kinds of things. And so it was, I felt, oh, this is good. This is from God. That I might get in that kind of mode right now. On this, the first day of the church year. And do some things over these next 4 weeks that would prepare me well for the entire rest of the year. And we want to talk about Advent and some of those perspective kinds of things this morning. And I want to do them from the book of Joshua. We've been in Joshua all fall, and it speaks to similar kinds of themes. This idea of entering a new season, of crossing the Jordan, of following God, is also that sort of similar theme to a new year of starting afresh and seeing where God is moving. And so I want to base our discussions over the next two Sundays on the first six verses from the book of Joshua. So Joshua chapter 1, the opening verses, and it begins this way. It says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. So now you need to understand, Joshua has been Moses' assistant for the last 40 years, and they've wandered in the desert. And Moses does not go out in a blaze of glory in a final battle to conquer something. That's not the story of his death. The story of his death is that he leads the people up to the Jordan River so that they can see the promise of God, as Todd has been saying, just a stone's throw away. But God has already told Moses that he will not enter the land. And so one day God comes to Moses, and Moses walks out into the desert, and God takes him to a high place and shows him the land, but Moses dies in that place. And so that's why it starts the way it does. Because Moses has just left. But God comes now to Joshua and says, he's not coming back. Moses is dead. And he says, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people into the land I am giving them to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you just as I promised Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. So I wonder, what was the talk around the manna when Moses didn't come back? And what does a new season sort of look like? Some of them probably said, well, we've lost the real leader now, haven't we? And Joshua is good, but he's no Moses. So there might have been a sense of a bit of danger as they faced the prospect of new leadership. And I wonder if some of them felt a little bit lost and alone, because it's sort of like now they're on the edge of this thing and God's sort of saying, well, there it is. Have at it. Best of luck. Or did they sort of feel a bit abandoned and unstable and uncertain? That somehow God had got them this far, and maybe in a new season God would just sort of say, well, I'm sort of done with this wandering around. There it is. Make the best you can of it. And they sort of thought, well, we'll sort of carve out a little section here just against the river and hope it works. Because new seasons and this kind of situation can be a bit disorientating. And that things have changed and we've lost our bearings and sort of don't know how will this work and what will it look like. And I think our season might be like that. If you open the phone app on your phone, what's the first thing it wants to do? Before it can help you find whatever it is you're looking for, it has to know where you are. So how does it do that? Because you move around, and today you're here, and tomorrow you're at work. Well, the app is programmed to figure out your location by connecting to some fixed points. And fixed points in a cell phone world are towers. And so it knows if I'm here and I open my app that there's a tower just over here, but there's another one over there, and between those two fixed points, it can figure out where I'm standing. The more points, the better. The more accurate it can determine my location. And I think in what God says to Joshua is like that process. He's saying to Joshua, yeah, there's lots of things changing. Moses isn't here. The land is going to be different. We're going to be doing something different. But there are some fixed points that I want you to understand before we go any further. And the first part of those fixed points are included in this phrase. God says to Moses, what am I about to do? I'm going to do what I swore to their fathers to give them. This is what I promised to your fathers, is what God says. And so the first fixed points is God is reminding Joshua that his fundamental stance toward the people of Israel is one of blessing, is one of promise. That his default stance is not away and hands off, but it's one of giving. He's saying, the promises, I've always been a God of promise. I promised your fathers back at Abraham's time, but I continue to be in that kind of a posture toward you. I want to give, I want to bless, I want to fulfill my promises. And he says, I'm not just making up promises as I go along. He says, these are the same promises. I'm about to do what I have said all along I was going to do. I'm going to fulfill the promises I gave to Moses and to your father. And the words that I read in Joshua 1 are almost identical to the words that Moses has in Deuteronomy 11 about what the promise of God was. But he's really connecting it not just to Moses, but to Abraham. and the promise that God gave to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, where he comes to Abraham and says, leave your country and your family and go to the land I will show you. And he says, to your offspring I will give this land. That's the promise that Jesus, that God is now prepared to fulfill in Joshua's time. And so you see the fixed points and how Joshua's commission is now aligned with all of those things. That he's not about to try something new and unusual. We've been wandering around for a while. How about we try some conquering? No, he's doing something that's in line with what God has been doing since Abraham. It's part of a larger plan. It's in keeping with those things. It's not all different. There's some things that are going to be absolutely the same. And there's some momentum in that. He's not sort of trying to gain traction. Okay, now we've got something to do. No, God has always been working. And he's been moving them in that direction. The second point of reference is contained in this phrase, I will cause this people to inherit the land. I will cause this people to inherit the land. Now you understand what an inheritance is. It's the owner of some property, something of value, who has decided to give it to someone else. Typically we understand that in terms of happening at death. That at my death, my property, my things of value will go to my family. But the word in the Hebrew is more general. It's about any gift that of something I own that I would give to someone else. So in what way is what's about to happen in the book of Joshua an inheritance? There hasn't been a Hebrew person in the land for 400 years. The only people that have set foot in that land were the 12 spies, and they didn't exactly own anything. They snuck in and they snuck out. The last families that lived there were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I think the only land that Abraham actually owned was the plot of land he buried his wife in. So how is this an inheritance? If we said who's the owner of this land, the people of Jericho are going to have something. They have an answer for that idea, for that question. But God is saying, I will cause this people to inherit this land. What's he saying? He's saying, I still have ownership of this, not just this land, but all of my creation. That he's tying what Joshua is doing back to Genesis chapter 1, to saying, I created the world, and I am still the owner of this place. And I'm not an absentee landlord. I am still doing things and I still make decisions. And I've made the decision that this land I will give to you. And so the Lord's commission to Joshua is not a general, well, there it is, go get them. It's a much more specific commission. He's saying, I am releasing you into the next stage of the plan that I've been working out since creation, since Abraham, and you're standing in line with all of the promise that I made to your fathers, and I am now ready to give this land into your hand. And so as you think about a new year and the things that God has started to move in your heart and in your mind, and you're feeling a bit like, wow, I wonder how that's going to be, the fixed points that God gives to Joshua might already give you some encouragement. Because God, of course, continues to work. God continues to make promises to us. And so there can be some certainty and some stability come back into your thought process and into your heart as you consider that. But we're in Advent. And when we think about Advent, we see in Advent God move in his world in ways that are far more glorious than anything Joshua saw. Joshua had it amazing. He saw some amazing things, but they pale in comparison to Jesus' first advent. The first coming of Jesus is the most glorious intervention in history that mankind has ever seen. That in His coming, God would enter into our time and space and take and come as a baby. That is a much more glorious fixed point than anything Joshua had to hold on to. This is how John explains it, talks about it in his gospel, John chapter 1 and verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen His glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. For from His fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made Him known. We are standing at a point in history where we can look back on Jesus' first coming and say, because of that fixed point, everything is different. Something in history dramatically shifted when God came at that first Christmas. That it's a much more intimate and personal involvement of God in history than the involvement of, that He had with Abraham and Joshua. That God was saying to Joshua, I'm not distant. But, I mean, how close is He? He's right with us. He's in our lives. He's in a human body. He is walking and communicating with us person to person. That's the kind of God we have. That God isn't just saying what I created is good. He's saying it's good enough that I could come and place myself into human flesh. I could dwell with mankind. What an affirmation of what God created. He hasn't said, well, it's so polluted and disgusting and gone so far from what I had hoped. Let's just wipe it off and start afresh. It's not fixable. No, no. The incarnation says there's something still marvelously beautiful about humanity. It is capable of holding in some respects God. Jesus comes and he doesn't just say this creation is mine. He walks in it and he reclaims things. He pushes back. He starts the establishment of a kingdom. That's Mark chapter 1. Jesus said, the time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God is at hand. He didn't just come and say, boy, you guys have made a mess. He said, no, I'm coming to take back what is rightfully mine. I've come to put my authority and rule and power in place here on earth. That's the kind of fixed point that we need to dwell in that over these next 4 weeks. We need to sit in it and have it soak into our hearts so that we can make sense of our location in the present. But in this time of Advent, we must also look ahead to Jesus' second Advent, His second coming. Because Advent has always been about understanding the first Advent in order to be prepared for the second one. To be ready. Jesus talked so much about, are you ready? Are you anticipating my second Advent? Revelation chapter 21. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be His people, and God Himself will be with them as their God. So do you see the parallel language from John chapter 1 and Revelation 21? A second advent. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning or crying or pain anymore. for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. And he said, Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. This Advent, we need to be reoriented and measure our position relative to the second advent of Jesus, his second coming. That what is ahead of us is victory. That the best is yet to come. That God is coming to dwell with us and to put things into their proper order, to put things right, to rule. The prophets always talk about him ruling with righteousness and justice. John, the picture in Revelation 21 was, I am making all things new. I am wiping away death and pain and tears and mourning. This is a fixed point, something we can, that's what the person on the throne says. That's what Jesus says. These words are trustworthy and true. They're a fixed point. We can know where we are when we understand that second advent. And so I want to suggest that you take some time over these next weeks to considering the first and second advent of Jesus. And what does it mean for where you are? All the circumstances of your life, all of the things that have happened so far, that you would take some time to understand and take back a step to understand the great picture of God's salvation. That part of the glory of ordinary time that we've been in over the last 6 or 7 months is this deep engagement with the ordinary things of life. And so our lives are full, and there's lots that we have our hands on, but this is an opportunity to take a step back and say, God is up to something that started right in Genesis chapter 3 and has carried on over the course of history. And I'm in that place. I am part of that plan. I'm not starting something new. I'm not making it up as I go along. I'm part of something that has been going on. It's been one of the unexpected blessings for me of becoming a deacon and entering into holy orders. I wasn't anticipating this very concrete understanding and putting on my collar as signifying for me that part of the plan I'm in is this line of deacons and priests and bishops that goes back to 2,000 years. That I'm not just entering into something and saying, well, yeah, okay, let's try it. But I'm in this line, and it's something very concrete and real. I can actually look at names. But I wonder what in your story might be like that. How might you over these next weeks place your story into that picture of what God is doing? That you might take some time to read the journal, your journal entries over the last 6 months or a year, and say, what's God been doing in my life? That you might ask some questions about your family and say, what has happened? Tell me about God in our family and what he's been up to. And that you might see the thread of God working in your family, and that you might tell the story of what God is doing to your kids, to your neighbors, to the people that you engage with this Advent. And say, I don't know what's going on, but God, see, this is the hand of God. This is the kind of God we have. That you might, as you celebrate and prepare your heart and as the song said, have wonder and awe in your approach to the events of Christmas. That you might soak in the incomprehensibleness of the incarnation. How does that God, man, together, both complete, undiminished? And what and all of the things that are encapsulated and included in what Jesus did by coming to earth. And you might ask yourself, how do I see that in my life? How am I standing in line and receiving the things of the first advent of Jesus? What is Jesus at work in my life? How is his birth, his life, death, resurrection, and ascension appearing in my life? That you might update your picture of yourself about where you are on that journey and what he's building into you. And that you might not realize that people are increasingly seeing Jesus in you, but you don't see him in yourself. And that you might just give some time to understanding what it is that he's doing, what he has done in his coming for you. And that you might consider the second advent. And I love Todd's picture about the lights on a runway. That if you're flying into an airport at night and you come in at the runway from the side, it just looks like random lights scattered around. But when the pilot is in line with that runway, the lights line up. And they point in the right direction. And so I wonder, as you consider the second advent and what Jesus said we could expect about a kingdom that advances and moves forward and will come to this glorious second coming. What's happening in your life that might start to be lights on a runway that point to what's next for you, about where he's taking you, what you're being asked to enter into, and that you might gain some clarity as you look ahead. And you might be able to establish yourself in what's happening. So I'm going to invite Melinda and the team to come and just end with this consideration for you. Our journeys are all different, and there's many things that you brought with you this morning. And so my question just is, would you allow God to say some things about what your fixed points are? What would he remind you of this morning about what are the fixed things in your life, about what he's doing in your life? And what might he say to you about the place you're currently in? What might he just want to say to you about the current place you are standing in? Let's just pray. Jesus, we ask you to speak to us this morning, to reorient ourselves on this journey. And so we invite you to speak to each heart this morning about who you are, what you're doing, and how we fit in to your first and second advent.